Welcome to 1951 Down Place, the home of Hammer Films discussion. Each month, our hosts, Casey, Derek, and Scott, take a look at the film catalogue of the legendary Hammer Films production, one picture at a time. Covering everything from the famous Hammer Gothic horror films to their science fiction films, their thrillers, their film noirs, and comedies, this podcast will offer critical opinion, production notes, and historical facts about the films that make Hammer great. Make yourself comfortable, have a cup of tea, and welcome to 1951 Down Place.
Happy New Year and welcome to episode number 51 of the 1951 Down Place podcast. My name is Scott and my award-winning co-host Casey and Derek will be along directly. As December is Derek's birthday month, along with some lesser-known holidays such as Christmas, Hanukkah, National Chocolate Cover Anything Day, we let him pick his movie and he decided to expose us to an episode of a television show, Hammer House of Horror. This was a British series that ran from September 13 to December 6, 1980, and featured 13 episodes. The specific episode that we're looking at today is The House That Bled to Death that aired on October 11, 1980. This episode will be a little different than your normal 1951 Down Place presentation, as the subject matter is only 51 minutes long. So during our talk of the film, we do spoil The House That Bled to Death. So you might want to check out this episode before we dive into it, right after a word from our newest sponsor. Do you have a plumbing problem at your home or business? Are you embarrassed by slow drains and tough blood stains around your sinks? Don't panic and call just any old plumber. Call the experts at Peter's Plumbing. Hi, I'm Peter Lee, Master Plumber, MD. And if you have any of these issues, we can have a certified master plumber and hermetologist to fix your needs 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We feature the Collison collar on those bleeding pipes, which can save you thousands of dollars and prevents nearby pipes from having to be rippered out. We also feature the latest Monroe manifolds that will keep your blood and water separated. Don't try to fix it yourself. Bestwick, one of our highly trained specialists to pinpoint your problem with the latest in Denzberg diagnostic tools that provide an easy-to-understand estimate to fix your specific plumbing and bleeding needs. Remember, Peter's Plumbing, cushioning your wallet against high prices since 1951 and proud sponsor of the 1951 Down Place podcast, your home for Hammer Films discussion on the web.
Prepare for a spine-tingling, nerve-shattering podcast featuring all your favorite monsters. You won't believe your ears when you listen to Monster Kid Radio. Here are your hosts, Derek M. Cook, and his ever-rotating stable of guests discuss your favorite classic and sometimes not-so-classic monster movies. Subscribe to Monster Kid Radio through iTunes or Stitcher, or visit monsterkidradio.net before the next weekly episode of Monster Kid Radio. Go through the archives for interviews with Sarah Karloff, Victoria Price, and Joel Hodgson. Listen to discussions about movies like Creature from the Black Lagoon, Island of Terror, and King Kong. And don't forget convention coverage from Monster Bash and the H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival. Classic Monsters, Modern Talk, and the Head of Rondo Hatton. Only on Monster Kid Radio.
This is Victor Von Psychotron, host of Weirdorama, and you are listening to 1951 Down Place, the place for Hammer film knowledge on the web.
Listeners, by the time you hear this episode, the end of December, the big holiday would have come and gone. So from me personally to you, I hope you had a very pleasant and exciting Derek's birthday.
Yes, I hope you enjoyed celebrating Derek's birthday too.
Derek's birthday was this month?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. 64?
Yeah, that's it. I've been joking with Brenda, my wife, that my warranty's up, so I kind of feel that way right now. So,
well, since you guys brought it up, I do think it's important to point out, at least for me, that with this being Derek's birthday month and Scott being what Scott is, I am the baby of the show.
Scott being what Scott is? What does that even mean?
I am the elder statesman of this show.
Yes.
Oh, God, we live in a...
It's not often that I, in my podcasting life, that I get to say I'm the youngest on the show, so I got to make sure I jump on the cheats.
I'm just uncomfortable living in a world in which Scott is the elder statesman of something. That's a little scary. Oh, listeners, welcome to the Always On Topic 1951 Down Place podcast, your home for discussion about how old we are. I am Derek M. Cook. You've heard the voices of Casey Criswell and Scott Morris, maybe even in that order, I think.
And in all seriousness, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Happy holidays, everybody. Hope everybody had a good one.
Yes, happy holidays to whatever you celebrate.
I hope you were surrounded by loved ones and good plumbing, which we'll get to here in a second. before we get into this month's, I'm not even going to call it a movie. It's a TV show, but we'll get to that. Scott said we have an email, and you want to share that with us real quick? Because it might be something that we need to hear from Casey on. Casey has a short window of time here, so we'll make sure Casey gets a chance to respond.
Yes, we got an email from Jason DeCaverhall. And Jason writes, first, I love the podcast as it certainly helps me get through the workday, as does Casey's award-winning podcast, Cinema Fromage, Fromage, Fromage.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Yes, thank you.
Now, Jason goes on to write that he has a two-part question about Hammer.
God.
Jason goes on to say that he has a two-part question about Hammer that involves one of my favorite directors, and Jason's, by the way, the great Alfred Hitchcock. He wants to know, was there ever a point where Hitchcock was close to being a director or a producer of a Hammer film? He can't find anything on the matter, and I'm sure that it would have cost a bit too much for Hammer, he says. Following that, if he could have had a hand in directing a Hammer film, which one would you have given him? And Jason says that he thinks he would have done wonders with The Abominable Snowman. Then he says he looks forward to our next Dracula film, and it will surely have Peter McNichol eating bugs in it. Thanks for writing in, Jason. What do you guys think about Alfred Hitchcock and Hammer?
Oh, I have a hard time wrapping my head around Hitchcock and the glory days of Hammer, because Hitchcock did contemporary pieces, and the glory days of Hammer were basically the gothic stuff. So I don't know. It's interesting to think about.
We've Dracula already 1974.
Oh, that's true, but 70s Hitchcock is a different beast too.
Yeah.
Well, we've already touched on films like Paranoiac being influenced by what Hitchcock was doing.
Yeah, that'd be a decent one.
Have him do one of the, what Hammer themselves called their mini Hitchcocks?
Mm-hmm. Something like Scream of Fear, but I don't know how you could improve on that anyway.
What if he did Man About the House?
No. I'd be interested to see him do The Old Dark House.
The Old Dark House? You know, that's interesting, too, since William Castle did that for Hammer, and Castle was trying to become kind of like the Hitchcock of his genre, so...
How about this one? Hitchcock did an anthology TV series. What if he had done the film we're doing today, The House That Bled to Death?
I would have been a lot more blood.
I think the ending would have been a bit stronger if that was the case. I don't know. I hadn't really considered it too much. I don't know if Hammer and Hitchcock ever really circled each other.
Yeah.
I know in the 50s, Hitchcock came over to the U.S. So if they did circle each other, it would have been, I would think, pre-1955 or so. I know they did kind of in a roundabout way have a connection in that one of the last films that Hammer made before Michael Carreras, or excuse me, this was actually after Michael Carreras was no longer with the company, was a remake of The Lady Vanishes, which was a Hitchcock film from the 30s? Yeah, I think so, the 30s. The Lady Vanishes by Hammer starred Elliot Gould.
All aboard for a journey you'll never forget. A nonstop adventure combining baffling mystery and thrilling suspense.
Now you have a good sleep, and then I'll wake you up in time for a good hot lunch.
Now you see her. Now you don't.
Excuse me. The lady who was sitting there, the English lady, do you know where she went?
There's been no English lady here.
The lady in the brown hat, have you seen her again?
Did your Mrs. Froy have a bag or something?
Yes, a great big leather one. She kept it right up there.
But why would they want to kidnap a sweet, harmless English nanny?
I mean, people don't just disappear into thin air.
Maybe she's a sweet, harmless English spy.
A spy.
If there really is a conspiracy, we better figure out who's in on it and who isn't.
Looks like they mean business.
Elliot Gould, Sybil Shepherd, Angela Lansbury, in a classic thriller, The Lady Vanishes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I only giggle because the last time Scott and I did an Elliot Gould movie, it was something that kind of scarred me. So.
I've blocked that film out of my mind. And
you're welcome.
Yes. And if you're out there, Joe, it's your fault. You know who I'm talking about.
I know who I am, huh? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Interesting to think about, though. What if Hitchcock had done their Phantom of the Opera with Cary Grant in the movie?
Ooh, that's interesting.
What if Hitchcock did Phantom of the Paradise? That'd be awesome.
I didn't know if you're going to go with that or your other favorite non-Hammer movie.
The Peter McNichol movie?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Casey, what's that one?
Some good old Dracula Dead and Loving It?
Uh-huh. Mel Brooks and Alfred Hitchcock bring you today's biggest scares and biggest laughs in Dracula Dead and Loving It.
By Hammer. Oh, boy. Well, you mentioned TV anthology series, and that really kind of gets us to what we're talking about today, this month, on the podcast.
Your birthday pick.
That's right. The tradition here on 1951 Down Place is whoever has a birthday that month gets to pick the movie we're talking about. I went way out the box this time. I went with a TV show. I went with the episode The House That Bled to Death from the TV series The Hammer House of Horror.
Now, I've got to ask you a question. From now on, when we pick our birthday picks, do they have to have a birthday party in them?
No. That was a happy accident. I honestly, and I think I've said this in a previous episode, I'd never seen this episode before. So I didn't know what to expect getting into this. I guess there was just something about there's a birthday connection. Actually, I just picked it because I like the title. It felt very Amicus-y, you know? So, was this a first time viewing for you too?
Yes.
This was a first time, not only for this episode, but any of the episodes in the Hammer House of Horror series. I think there's 13 total.
Right. Yeah. It only lasted one season.
I've watched one or two of them before. I haven't seen this particular one. They just never really grabbed me, though, the same as the movies did.
I was fascinated by it. And this was also the first time I had watched any of them. I've been sitting on the box set for a while, but once we started the podcast, I've been kind of holding off to dive into them because I wanted to see if we were going to talk about them on the show and wanted to have that first-time viewing experience.
You know, sitting on them is hard on the DVDs, right?
You know it is, but, you know, if you set them a certain way – never mind.
That's not the player you're looking for.
Oh, boy. I worry because Casey's editing this month, and I don't know what's going to make the cut or not.
I hope that laugh makes it.
So let's talk a little bit about the history of Hammer. I mentioned earlier the Lady Vanishes was pretty much near the end of Hammer's run after Michael Carreras had left the company. Michael Carreras being one of the big wigs, the person who guided Hammer through most of what we know Hammer for. The company was started by his father and a few other folks. And Carreras really wanted Hammer to keep going. It's not like he was done. He really wanted to keep the company around, but you know, the late 60s, the 70s, the film industry's changing. Hammer's trying to hang on. They come up with a few good movies, but overall, they're just not doing so well. They have creditors calling on some loans that Hammer has. Hammer is in debt. They leave Bray Studios completely. Things just aren't going so great. When Carreras leaves Hammer, that's pretty much the end. Hammer gets absorbed by a creditor. Basically, my impression is that they did the equivalent of bankruptcy and somebody else took it over, like a bank. Let's see. I think I wrote this down. Something called ICI. I don't know what that stands for, but somebody took over the Hammer name and pretty much all the Hammer properties. There were a couple of people that were still attached to Hammer, people like Roy Skeggs, who for years had worked with Hammer's licensing department. He and Brian Lawrence actually licensed the name Hammer from ICI to produce this series. So technically, and I didn't know this going in, this series was not produced by Hammer, but they licensed the name to put the Hammer name in the title. The title is going to be The House of Hammer as opposed to The Hammer House of Horror. Fortunately, it did well enough that it allowed Lawrence and Skeggs to make enough money to actually buy Hammer from ICI out of receivership and then bring it back to Hammer and produce the next series that they would do, which was not a season two, but another series altogether. The Hammer House of Mystery and Suspense, I believe it was. But I found that really interesting that this wasn't necessarily technically produced by Hammer, even though the series itself has a lot of Hammer connections. Peter Cushing turns up in an episode. In fact, my understanding is that outside of a documentary that he did a few years later, or several years later, this was the last time Cushing would be attached to the studio. Roy Skeggs, like I said, been with the company for a while. James Bernard's music can be heard in a number of their episodes, including this one. So there's still a lot of Hammer people involved. But it's just not the same Hammer that Michael Carreras had spearheaded for years.
So in other words, you say it doesn't really fit for our show.
It fits better than Dracula Dead and Loving It?
Nonsense.
This series feels a lot like 1960s Hammer, from what I understand. At least the episode that I saw. And I did scan through the DVD set that I have and watched a number of the little introduction pieces, because the DVD's got a nice little, like, 2-minute intro for each episode. It does feel very 60s Hammer. There's not any gothicness outside of some James Bernard music that sometimes feels a little out of place, at least in the episode we watched for this. They did kind of produce this series the way Hammer produced their films. In the 60s, they took over a former girls' school called Hampton House, and that became their studio. They shot in Hampton House and immediately surrounding, or in the immediate surrounding area. Roy Skeggs actually moved into Hampton House, turned the headmistress's office into his office. He slept in the barn. So it really became this small production company, similar to what they were doing with Bray, just for television and on a much smaller scale. This episode, The House of Blood to Death, came out in October of 1979 or 80.
1980.
Okay, yeah, October 11th, I believe, right?
Yep, October 11th, 1980.
Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting episode. I have a feeling there's going to be some lukewarm reactions kind of based on things that have been said so far.
Like blood warm?
Sure. Do either of you have any other information about the TV series?
Unfortunately, no. I wasn't able to find a lot. In fact, I was under the impression that this was kind of Hammer's last gasp before they went into bankruptcy. So what you're saying even contradicts what little I had found out about it.
Yeah, it was just not a good time for Hammer. The film industry was different. You know, they just weren't making money hand over fist the way they used to. And it's really kind of sad to look at the history of Hammer at that point. Of course, somebody else picked up Hammer in 2000. And then again, somebody else bought Hammer. And those are the same people that own it today. And they put out a handful of films. even though the Hammer of today feels more Hammer in name only, like this TV series probably should have been because it wasn't technically Hammer. I feel like the TV series still has, at least the episode we watched, still has some of that Hammer 60s-ness to it that I can still say, yep, that's Hammer.
See, I didn't get a sense as much of this being a Hammer film as just your standard Dark Shadow, not Dark Shadows, but standard, I meant to say a standard anthology type series. I didn't get a Hammer vibe off of that. Doesn't mean I didn't like it or like it any less. It just didn't feel Hammer to me.
Yeah, I agree with you until I heard Bernard's music, and I'm like, oh, okay, of course.
I mean, obviously for this, I got more of a 70s haunted house Amityville horror, which is...
Oh, yeah.
Which is more what I equate this film with than a Hammer film. And yeah. I don't remember Hammer, or had not read too much about Hammer doing haunted house-type movies.
What about The Old Dark House?
Well, that's the only one I could think of. And that was more comedy than anything else.
Yeah? You laughed at that one?
Tom Poston was a saint.
He killed Hitler, from what I understand.
That's what this show is missing. Tom Poston.
You know, actually, before we get too far, maybe we need to bring that up. Tom Poston, Scott Baio, Joni Loves-Chachi, Peter Cushing. What else do we have?
Well, I've already mentioned Peter Cushing in the opening.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He did come up in the talking about the episodes, too.
Okay. I just couldn't remember if there's anything else. Scott Bakula, is he becoming a thing now?
If not, he should be.
I'm actually Scott Bakula jumped in from the future trying to save you two's asses. Not again.
But what was his thing? Was it, oh boy. Was that
oh
what
boy.
It was?
Yeah.
Except for the one time where he jumped into a Jewish rabbi and he said, oy vey.
And this is the Quantum Leap podcast. Thank you for listening.
I love that show. Let's start that.
Yeah.
Let's make it more broad than that. Let's just do the Bakula cast.
Yeah, but then we have to watch Enterprise.
What if Scott
What's
Bakula,
wrong with that? I like Enterprise.
What if Scott Bakula played Count Dracula?
Bakula's Dracula?
Yeah. I mean, the marketing is perfect, right?
What if Scott Bakula had directed a Hammer film?
What if he went back in time to be in a Hammer? Oh, boy. Okay, so Hammer House of Horror. Yes. All right. The individual episodes we discovered, actually, Scott pointed this out. We discovered a number of these episodes have been released as video releases, I forget the name of the company, but hosted
Thriller
by.
Video.
Ah.
Thriller Video, and they were hosted by the one, the only Elvira, Mistress of the Dark.
Well, hello, darling. Yes, sirree, it's little old me, that silly little sap whose jokes are pure crackerjacks. Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. And thanks for inviting me back into your lovely home for yet another edition of Thriller Video.
I hope you'll be very happy here.
Yeah, I hope so too. And I also hope that we're not going to be left alone, you and me. So, let me tell you about the movie you just picked up, okay? It's called The House That Bled to Death. Not the house with a minor scratch, not even the house that lost a lot of blood. We are talking bled to death. Actually, that's a lot more common than you might first imagine.
And that's actually the version I watched.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yes.
I looked for it. I want to see her version of this.
It's actually very extremely light on Elvira.
Oh, that's disappointing.
At least the copy I had. She shows up in the beginning. She introduces the movie. She doesn't show up again until the very end. And then she has some bits after the credits. So...
Well, that's surprising and disappointing, actually, because it's not like a full-length feature, so you would think they would have filled it out.
Yeah.
Because I actually found...
Because Elvira filled it out.
I actually found a New York Times article that reviewed this film, her version of it. And it has the quote, Elvira quote...
Because once a house starts to bleed, it is almost impossible to get a tourniquet around that sucker.
Yeah, she actually hosted several episodes of the Hammer House of Horror on Thriller Video. This isn't the only one. She did 6 or 7 different episodes.
And to be fair, Thriller Video wasn't her main gig, was it?
No, I don't believe so.
Yeah, I think that was like a direct-to-video type thing.
Yeah, it would have made sense from that era.
Yeah, they've never been released officially on DVD or Blu-ray, just on VHS. And copies, original copies, will cost you anywhere from $40 to $100, depending on where you find it.
Wow. Well, do we want to talk a little bit about the cast and crew of this particular episode? I always say that, and typically somebody says, no.
Hey, I worked hard to come up with some connections, so yes, I want to talk about the cast.
Oh, come on. There's one pretty obvious to me, but...
There's two.
Well, there was one for me. Do you have another one?
Which one do you have, so I know?
Well, like, it matters. That's not my thing.
Okay.
Thanks, Captain Vague.
Yeah. Vague casting is what they call it. Okay, anyway, let's see. Casting crew, directed by Tom Clegg, written by David Lloyd. David Lloyd did not do a heck of a lot in the writing department. In fact, this is only one of three of his credits listed on the all-knowing, I'm sure, Internet Movie Database. Tom Clegg, outside of having an awesome last name, really didn't have anything to do with Hammer either, although he directed the series... Sharp something or other, the Sharp Captain Sharp Company.
Sharp's Company.
That's it. Yeah, he directed that with Sean Bean, which I'm guessing is a TV show series in which he did not die.
Yeah, he also Clegg also directed another episode of the Hammer House of Horror, Children of the Full Moon.
Okay.
Is he any related to Captain?
I hope he made people on set call him Captain Clegg.
If my last name was, I would. The cast is made up of a number of television actors. Not a heck of a lot of movie people got too involved with the series at this point anyway. We've got Nicholas Ball and Rachel Davies as William and Emma, the folks that are buying this house, the house that bled to death. Their daughter is played by Emma Ridley until the very end, when she's played by a slightly older actress by the name of Joanne White. And then we've got a couple of neighbors who... We're very, very friendly. Brian Croucher, who's taking a break from Blake 7, I guess. Okay, not really taking a break. Blake 7 was over. And Patricia Maynard, were George and Jean Evans. There's also a Mr. Powers, A.J. Powers, played by Milton Johns. And at first, you think Powers might be a real estate agent. That's all I want to say there so far. I don't know much about the cast. I tried to do a little bit of digging. He said Brian Croucher did Blake 7, and apparently he also in 2014 did a movie that I've got to see now called COOLIO, Time Travel Gangster.
Yeah.
Coolio, Time Travel Gangster. Sign me up. I'm in.
I'd watch that.
Hell yeah?
Yeah, I would watch it.
There's also a bunch of other kids and some moms, and I think that's really a small cast overall.
Well, I was able to find two connections in my connections gallery. Unfortunately, neither of them are James Bond connections. But I did find two...
You had one job, Scott.
But I did find two Disney connections. Is that where one of your two that you were... wanting to mention?
And to be fair, the only reason I knew it is because I watched the 2-minute introduction to this episode on the DVD. Ah. So yeah.
And would that be Emma Ridley?
Yes, it would.
Who plays the young Sophia. She also appears as Ozma in the Disney film Return to Oz from 1985.
Which is awesome.
It is an awesome film. I do really like Return to Oz.
Yeah.
She didn't do a lot of film work. She actually auditioned for the role of Dorothy for Return to Oz and ended up getting the Ozma role.
And my other connection is Milton Jones, who was the real estate agent, in air quotes, Andrew James Power. He plays an imperial officer in 1980s The Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, did he?
Yes.
Ooh.
Huh. Well, that's timely.
Yes, it is timely.
Considering this is Star Wars month.
Now, our good friend Don Falcos did provide us with a list of Doctor Who connections.
Yes, I bet there's a bunch. This is a TV thing, right?
Yes. We have Rachel Davies, who played Emma. She also played Camilla in State of Decay. Brian Croucher, who played George Evans, played Borg in The Robots of Death. He also played Kirk in the direct-to-video spinoff Shakedown Return of the... Now, I'm probably going to butcher this. Sinantrons?
Sure. Wait a minute. Are you talking Star Wars or Star Trek or Doctor Who?
Doctor Who.
But his name was Borg.
His name was Borg, yes. Patricia Maynard, who was Jean Evans, played Hilda Winters in Robot, and she reprised the role in the Big Fish audio adventures Test of Nerve and Mirror Signal Manoserve. Milton Jones, who was that author, oops, I messed up there, the real estate agent, Andrew James Powers.
Wow.
Appears as Theodore Bennick in The Empire of the World, Guy Crawford in The Android Invasion, George Tovey, who was Old Man, played Ernie Clements in Pyramids of Mars. He's also the father of Robert Tovey, who played Susan in... Robert played Susan? In the features Doctor Who and the Daleks and Daleks Invasion Earth 2050 AD.
What? I'm sorry. Hold on. Who's this?
George's son.
Yeah. The son of George Tovey played Susan in Doctor Who and the Daleks and Daleks Invasion Earth 2015 AD. And as Don writes here, both of which starred some bloke named Peter Cushing. Now, Ian Scroons, who did special effects, was the visual effects designer for several Doctor Who stories. And Anthony Redd, who was the story editor, was script editor on Doctor Who for a short time in 1978. And he wrote the story The Horns of Nimmon and co-wrote the script The Invasion of Time. So thank you very much, Don. We really appreciate those Doctor Who connections.
So just a point of clarification, Roberta Tovey is her name, and yeah, she is the daughter.
Okay. Well, that makes sense now, because I can't read. Don, to be clear, everybody, Don wrote Roberta. I just misread it.
Oh, that was good.
So, my apologies to Mrs. Roberta Tovey, Miss Tovey.
Hey, you know what? It's 2015. Whatever.
You do you.
That's right. I got a vague connection here. This isn't something we do regularly, but given our email at the beginning, George Tovey also appeared in Hitchcock's Frenzy in 1972. So there's a little bit of Hitchcock for you, maybe? Maybe? I don't know. Maybe it's a stretch. No James Bond, though, huh?
No James Bond that I could find.
Hmm.
One other quick thing that I wanted to mention before we dive into the episode fully. The website io9 put together a list of their 50th scary television episodes of all time back in 2013, and this episode made number 35 on that list.
Wow. That's interesting.
And they say why it's scary, mostly because it's dripping with atmosphere and weirdness, and the children's party scene is legendary for its creep factor.
Hmm.
Well, to be fair, if you're searching for the top 50, you do have to stretch a bit.
All right. So this is what, the fifth episode in the series?
That is correct.
Oh, good. I was guessing at it. So this is the fifth episode. And the show starts, in the past, I don't know how long ago, not too long, I assume. But we see an old man, an old woman, Mr. and Mrs. Clements, and some shit goes down. This is a murder house. This is a home that goes on the market because the previous residents are dead at the hand of at least one of them. It was unclear to me.
It was unclear to you?
It was unclear to me as to who was motivated. I mean, Mr. Clements, yes, but the whole thing with her screaming and laughing, kind of, I don't know. Bottom line, the Clements are dead. Some bad things happened here, so they can get the house pretty cheap when the Peters come along looking for a place to live. So we've got William, Emma, and Sophia, excuse me,
and Timmy.
Looking for a home. And Timmy, that's right. It's a family of four. Timmy is the family cat that Sophia loves. That actually bugged me quite a bit. Anyway.
I kind of figured it might.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of thought it would too.
Yeah. They're looking for a new start. William is getting a job in town. They need a place to stay. They move in to the home after buying it. The home is at 42 Coleman Road, and apparently they don't know about 42 Coleman Road's history. Well, the neighbors do, George and Jean Evans, and Jean makes it her point to become the welcoming committee and pops over for tea and ends up becoming a regular character in the entire story. She and her husband George show up as if the Peters didn't have any friends to begin with, and they become buds. They are over there. They're helping him unpack. They're involved in the birthday parties, even though there isn't really any kids. It's a weird, very immediately social connection, and I don't know if things were different in the 80s in the UK than they are now.
Hey, it wasn't weird for George. You know why he was wanting to be over there.
Oh, well, that's true.
She kind of showed up and never left.
She showed up, and George likes to watch. When Scott brings up an interesting point, because there is what I thought was sexual tension between William and Emma, which seemed odd to me, considering that they're this family unit, right? But at one point, it almost looks like William's sleeping in a separate bed. William comes up behind Emma at one point and reaches around, and she's like, "You promised, okay, hands off." So there's this weird kind of vibe. And at first, like I said, I thought it was a sexual tension, or maybe there was a problem in the relationship of some sort. No, that's not the case. There's something else going on. And that something else is that the home seems to have some problems. First, Sophia is in a bedroom, and, well, the wall starts to bleed. Let's just be honest, be blunt. And because this is a shorter TV episode, I'm probably going to spoil a little bit here. So heads up, put your spoiler ears on. I won't spoil the ultimate ending, though, unless we have to. The wall starts to bleed. Doors and windows start closing by themselves. The gas comes on when it shouldn't come on. And eventually, Jean and George come clean about what they know about the home, especially since Jean keeps seeing these knives turn up. These knives are what we saw Mr. Clements using at the very beginning of the movie. And they're these wicked-looking kukri blades.
Yeah.
That they're hanging in the kitchen, for decoration.
All this time that the house has been empty, trying to be sold or anything like that, nobody decided to take the giant knives off the wall.
I don't know if there was a fire or if this is supposed to go back to how old the home is. We can actually see an outline like in Soot or just a dirt, I guess, on the wall of where the knives were supposed to hang. No wonder they got this place cheap. It was filthy. Nobody cleaned it. But they keep finding these knives turning up, and it's just kind of a budget Amityville thing going on here, it feels like to me, this whole time. And ultimately, it culminates... There are two big shock moments, one involving the cat, which really bugged me. And when you find out later what really happened, it made me very unhappy. But the big thing, and I guess this is the culminating event that propels us into Act 3, there's one hell of a birthday party. A children's birthday party. Let's throw that in there because that makes it even worse.
Man, I think it's hilarious that you call this like a budget Amityville going on there, though, because it literally is. Because like when we first see the young girl and she sees the walls bleeding, it's in one tiny spot in her bedroom. No place else.
Mm-hmm.
And then the window's shut and, you know, like the guy just sits there and messes with the door. It looks like he forgot to open the door for a while. And then when the gas is going, the lady's spinning the knob. You can tell it's been completely disconnected because she's just spinning it in circles. And then that's all that was those three tiny things.
Yeah.
Well, one thing I want to say to
And that knife keeps turning up, though. The knife turns up a couple of times, yeah.
Well, and that in the hand in the fridge.
Well, there is that, too. That happened. Yeah.
But the one thing I want to say, you said a cheap Amityville. I don't want to say that it was cheap because Hammer was cheap. It was Amityville on a TV budget. I think any TV network at this time, it would have looked the same.
Especially in the UK. I don't think any of us mean that derogatorily. It feels like a low-budget Amityville thing, and in more ways than one, really. I mean, you've got the family that moves into the doomed house, things starts going down. But then if you get a little bit more meta about the whole thing, and depending on what you believe about what really happened at Amityville, well, There's that too. Let's see. There's this. We mentioned the hand. At one point, they find a hand in the refrigerator, a severed hand covered in blood.
Right next to the fresh milk.
Yeah, right next to the milk. Now, this is after, at one point, Jean fell asleep and found, what did she find when she woke up? A set of teeth and a sweater?
It was her knitting. The old woman's knitting.
Yeah.
And those dentures were busted up.
Yeah. Which seemed like a weird thing to wake up to and be scared about.
It seems odd that the youngest one among us would recognize the dentures and the fact that they were busted up.
I'm the baby of the group. Where?
Well, I grew up with a grandpa that every time, you know, when you'd leave, your mom would say, go give your grandma and grandpa a kiss and goodbye. And when you go to kiss grandpa goodbye, he'd stick his teeth out at you.
That explains so much about Casey.
Doesn't it?
All right, so we've got this children's birthday party that goes terribly wrong. In the middle of the party, the kids are playing. Sophia, who seems to have gotten over what happened to Timmy, and her friends are playing. And at first, it seems like it's a girls' party, but then a few boys show up as well, and they're drinking tea. And there's this kid, was his name Darren, who seems like he's a little troublemaker. And he's, like, checking out the fireplace. And
he's also very hungry.
He's stealing all the candy.
Candy in his pocket, yeah.
He's a little jerk of the group, but they're playing. They're having a good time, and then the water.
It's important
goes
to point out here, though. I wanted to interrupt you. It's important to point out here because you said it seems like she'd gotten over it. There's a very extremely vague time jump that happened here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's really what kind of propels the third act was,
or like in
the
third few act, months
at least.
Yeah. The only because way you can tell that is the house. They've been making repairs on the house the whole time.
Because you see the dad walk out with the ladder or something like that, and then she says, oh, you should come in and see what we've done, and they walk in the house, and it looks like a totally different place all of a sudden.
Yeah. This could have been expanded to fill a feature-length story in terms of some of the time jumps that happen. But, yeah, so we've got the birthday party. It ends terribly because the water goes bad.
Well, it doesn't begin that good either. One of the presents that
is a knife.
It's one of the knives.
Yeah, the knife keeps turning up, even though they've thrown the knives away at this point. When the water goes out, William goes upstairs or goes to wherever it is the water mains are and starts working on it. I don't know if I necessarily want to say what happens. What do you guys think? It was a shocking moment. I take it back. As soon as the pipe starts moving, I'm like, okay, I know what's about to happen here. But to the extent at which it happened really kind of shocked me.
I honestly can't say that many of our listeners are going to go track this down. So I'd think it would be safe to talk about.
I kind of agree.
Okay. So at the very beginning, when we saw the little patch of blood in the wall, I was thinking, oh, okay, that's where they got the title from. No. This is one bloody birthday party.
Yes.
Blood just comes pouring out the pipe, spraying
right
all
above
over
the table.
Everything. The birthday cake.
Yeah, it hits the birthday cake.
Parents,
and yeah.
Everything.
And it's actually really well done because the contrast, because everything set up for this birthday party in the kitchen that they've renovated and shit like that is really, really white. White tablecloth, white walls, everything, white dresses and whatnot. And all of a sudden, this blood starts pouring everywhere. It had a really good stark contrast.
Oh, it looked great. And to have it spray all over kids? Wow.
That was unnerving. A little unnerving.
It really was.
Especially with this movie where effectively everything leading up to this moment, in comparison to what happened, nothing really happened before this.
This severe, yeah.
So once this hits, you're like, oh, crap. The other thing that cracked me up about this moment, though, too, as soon as that light, that pipe started moving, there's at least three or four kids around that table that turned and stopped and looked at that pipe just waiting for it to happen. You could see the look on their face like, oh, this is where the fun starts.
One of the unnerving parts for me is after that's over, the next thing you see, the mother is taken to the hospital. She's actually under sedation at the hospital. But the dad and the little girl, Sophia, still stay the night in that house. And Sophia gets up in the middle of the night and walks downstairs. No one has touched that kitchen. It's still covered.
Yeah, they didn't clean it.
It's still covered in blood.
And it's even turned brown and shit by now.
Yeah. And what got me a little bit, she had a wind-up penguin that was sitting on a wooden chair that all of a sudden starts moving.
And it's covered in blood, no less.
Yes.
Props to them. That was when the Pigwood started, like, oh, here we go. It's going to happen again. But no, that's like the little tiny gasp at the very end. So Emma's in the hospital. She's under sedation. You see Powers again. Now, Powers at the very beginning of the movie, like I said, it seems like he's a real estate agent selling the home to the Peters. When Powers turns back up and William talks to Powers about the house, at one point he says, well, it's your house. He implies that it's his house, too.
Yeah, they meet at the Regal Beagle.
Yeah, pretty much. There's this conversation they have about, you know, getting some help, figuring out what they're going to do. And when he made the comment about, well, it's your house, too, I still didn't think there's something fishy here, because now I'm thinking, well, Andrew's really, you know, somebody with the bank. Maybe there's a mortgage situation going on here. He doesn't own the home flat out.
That scene just confused me. I didn't know what was going on.
I was trying real hard to put that together. And there are some vagaries that happen here near the end of the story. There's a comment where a busybody nurse tells Jean, the neighbor who came to visit her, that Emma really isn't married to William or doesn't exist in the country. She's not in the Social Security database.
Yeah, I kept thinking to myself, how many HIPAA laws you're breaking? Oh, wait a minute. This is the UK.
Yeah, privacy. Uh-huh. My wife is a privacy person at her job. So I'm thinking, that nurse just lost her job. And then we fast forward who knows how many years. And
supposedly three is what I read.
I'm glad they didn't put a thing on the screen that said 3 years later. But on the other hand, I wish there would have been some sort of indicator, something a little bit more subtle, or I guess less subtle since it was so subtle to begin with. Was a jump in time.
Do you know where they're supposed to be?
Is it California?
Yes. Yeah, they're supposedly in Hollywood now.
Yeah.
Do we want to spoil the ending, the twist? Because there's a twist.
Might as well.
I think the twist is great. So
I think the twist is pretty cool, too. So they're now living it up in Hollywood, and they're talking about $1 million and a book deal. And do they even mention a movie deal?
Well, the book, they got a cut of the book deal, and now AJ is working on getting the movie rights, and so they're going to get a cut of that as well.
The book being called The House of Blood to Death. At one point, a character holds up the book and you see AJ Powers' face on the back as the author. And this is where I was kind of going when I said this feels a little bit more meta when you think about Amityville Horror, because there are those who believe that the Amityville thing was all staged for, you know, the book to be written to begin with and all that. So it does have that vibe. And William and Emma, they're living it up. We've got a different actress playing Sophia to indicate the time has passed.
Yeah, we find out that the two parents were never married.
Yeah. You know, those slutty Americans living in sin.
Well, I honestly got the impression that Sophia wasn't even his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
He just found the woman and the daughter to play his family for this. And that they actually fell in love.
That was so confusing.
Yeah, the end does kind of feel vague.
That was so confusing because all of a sudden they changed actresses for Sophia.
Right.
And she's aged considerably in 3 years. And everything was so subtle in this transition, I actually had to rewind a bit because I'm like, what the hell just happened?
Well, and it makes it worse when you watch it on DVD and watch the introduction, that little two-minute introduction. Because when the guy is talking about Sophia being Emma Ridley, who was in Return to Oz, on the screen they're showing a still of Joanne White, who's playing the older Sophia.
And it was funny, too, though, in all this reveal and whatnot, because, like, the wife, Emma, she actually says to William, she's like, oh, well, what? I don't feel good for what we've done to Sophia. You know, how is this going to affect her and whatnot? And he's like, oh, she'll just have nightmares. She'll be fine.
She'll get over it.
She'll get over it. Well, Sophia is snooping around and opens up a trunk.
Well, she's the one that's reading The House That Bled to Death.
Yeah.
And sees the picture of Timmy in the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she's snooping around, and in a trunk she finds the knitting and a knife, one of those knives.
And Tracy, she's watching it with me. She says, oh, my God, she found the cat, too. Because that green tablecloth that they find early in the film, but they also grab that to wrap the cat in. So Tracy thought the cat was in the suitcase.
And that causes Sophia to kind of have a little flash and a break and, well, final reveal? Do we reveal the final twist?
Oh, yeah.
So there's a Friday the 13th part 5 thing that happens here. Well, Sophia picks up the knife. She snaps. She goes in. And she avenges Timmy, I guess. Because it's never flat out said, but Timmy's killed. And the way Timmy died couldn't have been an accident.
No.
Especially when you learn that William has been setting all this stuff up, probably with powers, the entire time, and didn't tell Emma about any of it. I mean, this is revealed in conversation. If I had told you what had happened, you wouldn't have been as scared. It wouldn't have been as authentic. So I you know, we didn't really clue you in as to what the gags were going to be. So that tells me that William went and killed that cat.
Yes.
Yes.
That asshole.
Very deliberately.
In a
probably
terrible,
with
terrible
the kukri knives.
Very, very bad.
You know, that makes this, you know, I'm thinking the whole time, oh, it was just an accident. And then you realize, it's like, man, that guy is a dick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Sophia, go get him. And she does.
And she does.
Yes. But it ended on a good, I like the way that this ended, though, because this ended up capping off the entire episode. And this is when the episode starts. But you see Sophia walk in with something behind her back. She, you know, then all of a sudden you see her pull her arm out, step towards the bed, and then it cuts to Emma where you see the big splash of blood on her face, and then it freezes and goes into credits. I thought that was a pretty good effect and way to end this.
Oh, it was a great TV show ending.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
This ended up being a little bloodier than I thought it was going to be, given that it was for television, but then it was also in the UK, and standards weren't the way they are here, a little bit more free. I mean, you see almost some nudity.
What do you mean, almost?
Well, okay. So you see some. I'm not talking about the Elvira version. I'm talking. No, I mean, you see quite a bit of Rachel Davies, and so does George. Yeah, I mean, this had a great TV ending, and we did spoil the heck out of it, guys. But
okay.
I ended up really enjoying this, even though there's some vague moments. I wonder what would have happened if it had been fleshed out a little bit more and made longer, like a TV movie. But, yeah, I mean, I ended up enjoying it overall.
It's made me interested to watch another episode or two. Is this a standard thing where they have the twist endings, like a la Twilight Zone?
I wonder. Casey, do you have a lot of experience? I can't remember. Did you say you've watched a number of these?
I've only watched two or three of them.
Okay.
So, I mean, I didn't hate this or anything like that, but at the same time, I thought it was awfully slow and a little dull. I liked the story aspects of it, though, that the way it changes kind of change things up by the end. There's a definite mark in this episode where once we hit the birthday party, this thing takes a huge swing towards the better. So I agree with you that it would be interesting to see this fleshed out in more of a movie format.
Yeah, throw some more money at it. I think this could easily be a decent TV movie, if not more.
Yeah.
I agree.
Especially for today, with a lot of the movies that are coming out, like The Conjuring, that was about, what's the name of that couple? Sorry, one moment.
No. The haunting couple, or the people that chase the haunt. Warren.
The Warrens.
And, yeah.
Yes. Ed and Lorraine Warren, who, you know, are big paranormal specialists, or were big paranormal specialists and all this stuff. And The Conjuring was about them. And there's all this talk about how they were all totally debunked for all the stuff they did and whatnot. I think a remake of this would fit really well in today's movie market that's out there, because there's a lot of those movies about that stuff and all of the ghost hunting shows and things like that. So I think this would be a good twist on all that.
It could, but I do wonder how many people would say, oh, they're just ripping off Amityville.
Yeah.
At the end, I don't know if they were ripping off Amityville or in a weird roundabout way putting Amityville down because of the story that it was all fake and just made to sell a book.
The influence is there. Whether they were making fun of, ripping them off, just kind of commenting on or playing on a similar theme, I don't know. But I'm glad you mentioned Amityville at the very beginning of this, Scott, because I was going to bring it up too, because it really felt like without Amityville, you wouldn't have some of this.
Right.
Yeah, I kept getting Amityville, and also Poltergeist was another film I thought of while watching this. I mean, I looked at Tracy when the father is burying the cat in the backyard, and I said, well, being this is the UK, they're not on an Indian burial ground.
God, that dad was an asshole.
Yes, he was.
So there's this one moment where he snaps and yells at the neighbor lady, none of this was happening until you showed up. Things were great until you came back around. So I was like, okay, well, that's kind of a jump, but I get it.
Oh, it made sense to me because when I saw that, I thought to myself, there's been other things that's happened that he's not, they've not told the outside world. And he's just, the pressure is just getting to him and he just snapped. That's the vibe I got off that.
You can tell there's something kind of beneath the surface, but then it was all an act. The whole thing was just an act.
Which makes him even more of an asshole.
Oh, yeah. No, he got what he deserved. And what do you guys think? You think Sophia took out the mother figure, too?
It depends on how much she overheard them talking earlier. I get the impression that was her actual biological mother.
Okay.
So if she heard that the mother didn't know totally what everything was going on, maybe not. What I want to know is, did Sophia then go after AJ?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I would think, I agree. I think that he probably was her biological mom, and I'm thinking that the whole thing was driven by Timmy. So I would think she had just gone after the dad.
Why are they keeping all the things in a trunk in storage?
In the house.
Yeah, I mean,
you think they would have left it with the old with the haunted house?
Or just tossed it or thrown it away or something, because isn't that what hangs up all these people that supposedly have like haunted house experiences or UFO experiences? Is years later, the guy who's taking pictures of UFOs supposedly landed in front of him in Florida. Years later, they find a model of the UFO in the house he used to live in.
Well, think about this. Think about this. He took that through customs.
I know.
They're in Hollywood now. He had to have taken that through customs.
Different TSA then.
Yeah, I guess so. Overall, I enjoyed it, though. And like Scott said, I'm real curious to check out some of the other episodes now. And I'm not going to wait until we may or may not cover this again on the show. I'm going to go through and check them out. Mostly curious about the follow-up TV series, the mystery and suspense series that they did as well.
Well, I'm definitely going to check out a couple more. I especially want to see the one with Peter Cushing in it.
Yeah. What was that? The Silent Scream?
I believe so.
That may be one of the ones I saw. It's been a long time.
And if anybody out there is interested in checking out more of this series, the DVD set, it's a 5-DVD set put out by Snaps Films, is available on Amazon currently, $22.99 for the entire set.
And that's what, 13 episodes?
That is correct.
It's not bad. Pretty light on special features. So like I said, there's a couple of minutes of introduction produced by Ballyhoo Productions on this, but nothing too in-depth.
And looking at the product details, I can do my James Bond connection now, because Pierce Brosnan is in an episode of...
Oh, that's right!
...of the series.
So. I forgot that. I knew that. Well, there you go. You feel better now, Scott?
I feel much better now. Casey, please throw in the James Bond sting.
Well, that's our coverage of The House That Bled to Death, which I know is a little off the beaten path, sort of, a little bit different. I'm hoping I can make the entire title fit into the image graphic that we use. I had fun doing it, though. I'm glad we did it. Guys, overall, thumbs up.
Oh, yeah. Glad we did this.
We've sat through far worse.
Oh, very much so.
Is this where the sheen music goes?
Captain Kronos.
Hey, now.
Hey.
You're outvoted on that one.
Hey, I'm the elder statesman.
So if any of the listeners have seen any episodes of the Hammer House of Horror, or this one in particular, and would like to let us know what they thought about them, or just our coverage, or just want to wish me a belated happy birthday, they could call in or email.
Or carrier pigeon.
Or carrier pigeon. Smoke signals are good.
Yes, but if they want to call using these newfangled telephones, they can call us at 765-203-1951.
Hey, Scott, when you were a kid being the elder statesman, did they have telephones?
Yes, but you just picked it up and say, hey, Ethel, please get a hold of. Now, if you have one of them newfangled pewters, you can send us email at podcast@1951downplace. You can also check out our website at 1951downplace.com. You can also find us on that Facebook doohickey thing. By searching for 1951 Downplace, you'll find our page and our group there.
Right on. We have a Twitter feed that we don't do a heck of a lot with. And I think that's pretty much it, right?
Yep, and it's 1951 Downplace.
Hey, did you name that after the show? I'm just kidding. Well, if, like I said, if you have any comments or anything you want to talk about, please send it in. And next month's movie, if you have any comments on that, is The Pirates of Blood River, our January 2016 episode. And did we settle? Are we doing Countess Dracula for Casey's birthday pick?
Yes, we are.
In February? Excellent.
I do have a potential list of films to cover next year past February, but I have not put that up on the website. Some of the films that we might cover include The Reptile, The Curse of the Mummy's Tomb.
Yes.
A film called The Unholy Four. The Horror of Frankenstein and Taste the Blood of Dracula are some that are on our list.
And Dracula Dead and Loving It.
So that's on a different list.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah, that's
speaking of, since we're at the end of the episode here, I was going to bring it up because you talked about The Mummy. They're talking about remaking Universal's Mummy, which I know we're all fans of the Universal flicks as well. So it's not directly Hammer related, but what do you think about them wanting to turn The Mummy into a female for this round?
So was it on this show that I was talking about my mummy fetish?
Yes, it was.
So there is that. I like the Egyptology aesthetic that you see in a lot of these movies. And yeah, I got a thing for mummy. God, this is going to make me sound terrible.
He loves his mummy.
Yeah, I've got mummy issues. I really do. Did you see one of the names that was thrown about for that?
Yes. The one I saw, I think it was, Sophia Boutella, I think, from Kingsman.
I heard that, but I also heard they were trying to get, was it Angelina Jolie?
Yeah.
Now, see, I thought you were the name of the creature, like Titty Common or something like that.
Wow. If that's not a movie yet, Scott, you and I have something we need to write this afternoon because that sounds awesome. So sell it to the Asylum, put it on Sci-Fi Channel, making bank. The Curse of Titty Common. Wow. I don't know. Are you excited for it, Casey?
I don't know, but the girl that they've got, that they've been talking about, that Sophia Boutella, she was in Kingsman and a couple other shows. She looks, she was great in the Kingsman, so I'd be curious to see what she comes up with. And she has the look.
The look. What is the look? The
she kind of looks Egyptian.
Oh,
okay.
I mean, in the classic sense, like if we looked at Hammer's, the original mummy flick that we covered, she would have made, or one of the, I don't remember, she would have fit well for the reincarnated princess.
What the hell picture did you people just send me?
I didn't send you
that's
any
her
picture.
I want to see the mummy do that.
Wow. That's, she's flexible.
If they can give me a mummy movie where the mummy moves like that, I'll be happy.
She does have a ethnic look. Well, no, I mean, I could see getting her cast. I mean, she's Algerian, but I could see her playing a couple of different races the way they do in Hollywood. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think she'd pass better as Egyptian than Angelina Jolie.
I agree. Yeah, I don't think they should bring a lot of... Well, I don't know if they did. I don't know. Scott, you've been quiet on all this. What do you think?
So far, everything that I have read, seen, or heard about, not just this one, but all of the shared universe of the new Universal Monsters, none of it has appealed to me.
Not even Tom Cruise being attached to one, maybe?
Or Scarlett Johansson.
Oh, that's right.
No.
I've forgotten about that one.
Pardon?
Which one was that? Was Scarlett Johansson?
She's supposedly going to be Derek's 50s girlfriend in the remake of Creature.
Ew.
The first one, which may or may not be part of it, that was it, Dracula Untold. Now, I've not seen it, but the previews made it look really horrible.
It wasn't the best. That was something Brenda and I actually talked about that on Monster Kid Radio. And at the time when they announced the shared universe, they didn't include that. But then when the movie came out, they did start talking about how it might be the first one in the run. But now they're not talking about it anymore as being part of the Universal reboot.
It seems to be that they haven't done any planning. They're just throwing out ideas on the internet to see what sticks.
Hey guys, we got to make this. Wouldn't this be great? Wouldn't it be cool if, hey guys, what about this? Yeah,
that's definitely the impression that I'm getting, and that doesn't fill me with, oh yeah, I want to go see what you're going to come up with.
I don't know. It's the biggest monster kid of the bunch, you know, with my podcast and all. I'll pay attention to it, but the Brendan Fraser mummy movies are okay as Hollywood popcorn movies go, but I don't know if I'm ready to see a modern day Hollywood mummy movie with a ton of money thrown at it, because it's going to be filled with so much CGI. And I just,
if they'd actually try and stick to the original formula of the original movies, I'd be more excited, but they're basically trying to turn them into superhero movies with monsters.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And you know that they won't take the approach that the original Mummy films, either Hammer's or Universal's, when it comes to doing a Mummy movie. Hell, if they follow the formula from the Universal Mummy, the first Mummy film, the audiences won't stand for it because you see very little actual Mummy in bandages action, and I doubt the studios would let them do that. There's really only one scene in the original Mummy that you see Karloff in the bandages.
You know, I really don't want them to follow the original films because I don't want an eventually... we'll get a Adam Sandler.
Adam Sandler and Rob Schneider versus.
Yes, exactly. Oh, Kevin James interacting with. Yeah, I don't want that eventual comedy.
Like the whatever that new Adam Sandler movie spoofing The Hateful Eight already on Netflix.
Yeah. Oh, what was Netflix thinking? I don't understand. I don't understand Adam Sandler's
appeal.
The guys over at Red Letter Media, they have a YouTube channel. They do quite a few things, and they refer to Adam Sandler's entire career lately as just being a big Ponzi scheme for him and his friends. Because he always brings the same people along, and they're always making money, but nobody really understands how or why.
Yeah, the only way I'd want to see them in that movie is if the monsters win.
And it only lasts a good like 5-10 minutes. That's really all I need to see. We have gone way off topic track for this podcast. Well, that's all right though. It's our show. We can do what we want, right?
That's right. We probably need to wrap it up because Mover Casey needs to.
Yes, I do. I got a boogie.
Now I got a vision of Casey dancing.
That is a vision. Let me tell you.
Now, see, I've got a vision of him in a, you know, hot and sweaty and a wife beater moving couches around, so.
Either way, I need a kukri knife right about now. That's all right, thanks for listening, everybody.
Happy holidays.
Well, okay, so you can go ahead and scratch that part about the story having a happy ending. Yeah, so what? I never did care much for happy endings in the first place. Now, the way I see it, that couple made 3 big mistakes, and here they are. Count them. Mistake number 1, they forgot to let that kid in on the fact that the whole darn thing was a great big shock. Mistake number 2, doing in that little flea farm that she called her pet. And mistake number 3, forgetting to use the lock on the bedroom door. Well, now you've seen the book. I know you can hardly wait to read the movie. It's coming soon to a library near you. You said something.